Yo, we diving in deep. I'm going to tackle something huge with this supplemental episode, and I am looking forward to hearing about how you apply it. So we're doing this as a supplemental episode to skill 8. One of the things that I talked about catering your approach is mastering those meta roles, and I have not done an episode dedicated just to those. And that is what this supplemental episode is about, mastering those 3 roles: empath, leader, sage. So we're going to dive into that, and want to give you just a quick overview. And before I do that, I want to tell you about something that happened in our house, and my wife sent me this quote. We bought this plant last year for our anniversary. We were celebrating 16 years, and for a number of reasons, it was a just important and special anniversary to us. So we bought this like really cool plant. I don't know how to describe it, the name of it, whatever. And it's big and it was fairly pricey. And so we had it in a part of our house and it was dying. And it was like, do we need to get rid of this? Neither one of us really have a green thumb. You could see my lawn and know that for sure. But we just moved it to a different part of the house and it's doing great. It's flourishing, and it's actually more of a centerpiece in the room that it's currently in, so we're enjoying it more. And I saw this quote by, I don't know this guy, he's out of Amsterdam. I'm not going to try to say his last name, but first name is Alexander. I'll go for it. Den, H-E-I-J-E-R, Den Heer. It feels like the substitute sketch from Key and Peele anytime I try to say a name, but he has this quote. When a flower doesn't bloom, you fix the environment in which it grows, not the flower. Whoa. And environment is huge. Now, this gets you into that conversation of nature-nurture. Is it nature or is it nurture? Over and over, science comes back to both. We know this as leaders and grappling with the idea of leadership. Most of life is gray. The answer is usually not either or, but some part of both and. And we want to learn how to create the environment for the flowers to grow. Now, not every flower needs to be on your team because you have a unique style as a leader that is particular to who you are. Just because they're an A player on another team doesn't mean they'll be an A player on your team. And just because they're a C player on your team doesn't mean they'll be a C player elsewhere. That's why you want to get them out so they can flourish somewhere else. But again, that's changing the environment too. So there's a lot, though, that you can do to change the environment, still staying true to who you are, and that's mastering these 3 roles of empath, leader, sage. I remember when I started running a few years ago, and if I missed a run, I'd be like, oh, I can't say that I run because I missed a run. I feel like a fraud. A lot of leaders I've talked to feel the same. You know, if I don't do this right, I'm letting them down. I'm failing them. Well, sight shift over and over goes back to this idea. We want to separate our role from our identity. So there's who you are as a person and there's the roles you fulfill. I want you to think about empath, leader, and sage as roles. So there's who you are and you can be an empath or a leader or a sage. Now, I dove into that in a general way in the episode, the main episode for this skill, skill 8. So I don't want to do that here now. Instead, I want to take each of these ideas further. And as I do that, just give you a lot of different handles and ways of thinking about how to express what it means to be a leader or an empath or a sage. Now, before I do, I like to use this analogy when I'm speaking on this. I want you to think about if we were in a room right now and somebody came in the room and tripped and fell and they were holding a cake, what would your natural style be? Would you jump up and want to lead and like fix things and delegate? Would you just immediately move into a place that you're giving that person comfort or feeling sorry for them, buying the cake that replaces the one that's messed up and not even telling anybody? Or would you move into a role of, you know, hey, when you're later on talking to them, when you come into a room, I've noticed that you kind of glance up and you look around and you lose your footing a little bit, you know, sage-like, trying to help them come to some awareness and grow them. When you think about how you would engage that situation, that'll give you a little bit of an indication. What's your natural bent? Because that's what you're going to head to in stress. And really, your natural bent, it's a combination of nature and nurture. It's the environment that you grew up in. It's the things that you've experienced. It's what you've seen the abuses of, because there is a block that I've found most people have being able to move into the one they need to most be in to cater their approach. It's because they've seen that one abused. I can talk to somebody who's very strong an empath, and they've typically seen a very strong leader in their life be manipulative, and so they're afraid to give direction at the level they need to. I've seen, you know, in my own life, I remember, you know, at some point experiencing some leadership from a guy who was just syrupy, gross, over the top, emotional, and just yuck, right? Like a hardcore backslapper. And it made me want to resist the empathy role. It made me want to pull back from that. And that was so unhealthy in my leadership for a long time because I wanted to make everything very logical, rational, Spock-like. Like, this is what we need to do. Take emotion out of it. And we learned in the perception piece, we can't do that. So we want to think about like how we are opening ourselves up to show more of these roles. Let me explain it this way. When I have, and I honestly can't remember if I've shared this on the podcast or not. I don't think I have. So I'm going to tell a little brief if in case that I have. But if I have a business owner that's local reach out to me to work together, oftentimes they'll want me to kind of like see their place, see where the action happens. Now, I can walk around with them and see the operation or see the shop or see what's happening. And in the leader part of my brain, like this is where we're at. This is what we can do next. This is how I can help them. Planning, piecing together things. After they give me the tour, I could just be, you know, approaching this as a leader going, all right, well, I've seen you've done some hard work here. Here's what we need to do, right? So I'm in the leader role. What's it like for me to pause for a moment and be in that empath role and go, hey, when I look around here, I see your hard work. Blood and guts have to be on this floor because I know what it's like when you're doing your own thing and you miss your own payroll so that you can keep everybody else's payroll going and maybe you stay up some nights and you're figuring it out. It's hard and you're doing awesome. Props for being here, right? I give that empathetic expression. Well, that is going to be a powerful moment for them. And if I'm in a flow state and I'm feeling that and I'm letting those words flow out of me, it's an enjoyable experience for me too. It's a connection. I can count on really one hand the number of people that have spoken into my life that deep and that present and that clear. And it is an amazing thing. I know I'm giving a gift when I do that. And if my fear of turning up the empathy in that moment keeps me from doing that or even being in the empath pathway, I'm going to miss a connection that needs to happen. So I already used this phrase, but let me explain it more. I said it's like live mixing your life. If you've ever seen sound being mixed, you know, it's like they've got the faders, the electric guitarist stands up, and while he's, you know, at the front of the stage wailing on the solo, the guy mixing the sound will turn that up, and then Flea from the Chili Peppers steps up for the bass line, and, you know, the mixer, you know, the audiologist, the sound person, that's probably not the right term, is turning up the bass when Flea steps up, and you know they're live mixing it. And so it's not that you're hard and fast and like I'm in leader role, I'm in empath role, I'm in sage role. It's that you're live mixing it and you're putting in parts and pieces as you need to. You know, while I'm recording this podcast, let's say a teammate from SiteShift texted me that he needed to talk. Well, I get on the phone with him, and what if he just needs 20% empath? You know, man, yeah, that would drive me crazy too. And maybe, you know, 80% sage. Hey, one time I faced this, here's what I did. Maybe my wife could text me and something happened to my kids and she's got to take them to the hospital. They broke a finger or an arm. You know, oh, I need to be like mostly leader. Okay, do this. I'll do this. And then sprinkle in comfort at the end. Hey, it's going to be okay. We live in a place that has a lot of access to modern medicine. This too will pass. I've noticed this with my kids, like moving in and out of these roles. They needed a leader when they were little. Don't run in the street. Chew your food and, you know, whatever. Constantly leading and giving direction to help them. And then there was this middle age where they needed a lot more empath. Like, oh, you scraped your knee. I'm so sorry. Now, as they're teenagers, it's a lot more of the sage. They don't want specific direction from me. They don't even want an intense emotional connection sometimes. They just need me to kind of soft pedal the moment, right? Hey, you know, they maybe will share a little bit of a struggle they're having with a neighborhood friend. And I'll say, yeah, that would be hard. When I was your age, I had this happen. Hey, I know you'll handle it great. And I let them bring who they are to it. Here's a way to think about it. Leaders fill the space with their power and their presence. They're giving direction. Sage creates a vacuum for others to fill the space. So they surface what's happening. Empath meet people where they are in the space. So I want to know these three roles and be able to switch up as I need to. Dan Pink in his book Drive, where he talked about a study that was done on what all employees want. They want three things. They want to get awesome at something, mastering. They want to pick what they get awesome at, autonomy. And then meaning, purpose. They want what they get awesome at, what they pick to get awesome at, to be connected to a bigger purpose. And the way that I think about that is, you know, in the leader role, I want to help people be accountable so that they can achieve mastery status. In the empath role, I want them to feel very cared for so that there's a sense of meaning in what we're doing. And in the sage role, I want to create space for their autonomy so they can be as developed as they want to be. Switching roles. Master these meta roles. Switch in and out of them as you need to be as effective as possible. We had a situation a couple months ago where my daughter had an Instagram page, or she has an Instagram page where she teaches people how to do makeup and shows different looks, and she's had a blast with it, and it's grown, and she's met people all over the world through it. It's so freaking cool. Well, one of the things we talked about was if it blows up, you're going to attract some haters. That just happens. And so she did. Somebody actually dedicated an account, built it to just tearing her down and saying horrible things about her. As her parents, you know, oh my gosh, we're like in messaging Instagram, take this down. You know, my wife calls me to tell me about this, and she's ready to do what a mama bear would and go nuclear. But, you know, there's another hurting person on the other side of that. And I watched her like be in the leader role and message the person and confront them. And the craziest thing, the person responded back. The person responded back and actually just shared that they were sorry, that they were jealous, they didn't mean to cause a problem, and they wouldn't be a disturbance anymore. And they actually said some really horrible things about themselves, just not a lot, but a little bit. And my wife switched roles. She switched from leader role to empath. No, you're not a horrible human being. Obviously, she's not endorsing the behavior or the action, but then she like started to encourage the person. It was an amazing moment. She just switched roles. And a lot of people have just told themselves, well, this is who I am. They're going to have to deal with it. No, we want to develop the dynamic capacity to be all three. Now, you probably know very few people that move in and out of these three roles effectively and at a high level. It's one thing to be able to move from an 8 at a leader, if we think about it like the live mixing, 1 to 10, 10 being full volume. It's one thing to be able to move from an 8 as a leader to a 4 as an empathy. It's another thing to move it to an 8 as an empathy. So not only do we want to be able to switch the roles, we want to be able to switch the roles in a very dynamic range. And you're typically uncomfortable opening up your range on the one that isn't natural to you because you saw an abuse of that in some way in your past. And I just want you to be aware of that. And if there are people that would say to me, this seems like too much work, right? This is too much intentionality. You just got to be who you are. What I'm saying to you is who you are can be all three of these. And there are people out there that are going to use it for evil. Let's use it for good. When I look back and study like sociopaths that motivated and moved a lot of people, I think of Hitler. I mean, Hitler was brilliant at being an empath. I feel you. This is the struggle. We're getting screwed. Leader, here's what we're going to go do. And then the sage part really can surface the protest. And hey, it's their fault. So let's murder these people. And it's a horrible atrocity that people that would be able to switch in and out of these three roles, that I'd have a negative example like that. I wish that more of us as leaders actively developed ourselves positively, to be the empath that comforts the problem, to be the leader that addresses and gives direction, and to be the sage that surfaces what's going on. And I want you to learn to turn up all three as high as you can, not just the one that you do under stress. Because strengths will become your weakness when you stay stuck in one of these roles. So we want to open it up. So now, let me talk to you about each of them specifically for a little bit to flesh these out. Let me talk to you about the leader role. Now, here's the thing. Life will always produce fear. Others will always cave because of that fear. Few leaders face their demons, wrestle them down, surrender to that darkness, step into the cave, find who they are on the other side, and really become the kind of person that is zeroed in on empowering and developing people. Now, that's how I would define leadership, you know, at its zenith. We're leaving everything better. We're not doing it just for us. We're helping people develop so we can leave it, right? Now, the trick here, or the awareness point that's very important, is to know that leaders that are still in an insecure state will use fear to motivate more than they use hope or love. You can still use fear to motivate, and it's appropriate sometimes. You just need to be careful of how you use it. You can't use hope and love too liberally. Fear is dangerous. I mean, there are times, you know, I'm giving my kids their allowance, and I did this weekend. I'm like, guys, here's your allowance. And I want them to remember what I'm saying. And I go, hey, at dad's current income, he makes an income more than 85% of the working population in this country. Now, guys, I'm not saying that to be arrogant. I'm just letting you know that I have a job that I made up, and that, you know, in about 18 months, it got to that place. So as I give you this money, I just want you to know I do know a little something of what I'm talking about. And I want you to make sure that you always do three things with your money. I want you to give. I want you to give it away. I want you to invest in your skills. That's the best investment you can make. Invest in who you are and develop yourself, because then you've got something to give the world. And enjoy it. Spend it. This is what the three things you do with money. It's not complicated. And so, you know, I say that to them every time I hand their allowance. Give, invest, spend. And I'm just looking for lots of different ways that I can fill the space with something that I can communicate to them how important it is, because I want the repetition of that just to sink in. Now, I'm doing that from an aspirational viewpoint. I could do it from a fear-based viewpoint. And there have no doubt been a couple of instances where I've been like, look, people that don't know where their pennies go become a victim of where their dollars go. And if they don't live in a way that they exhibit influence over their finances, if they don't control it, somebody else will control them. Right? So stir up a little bit of fear. But I'm not trying to get them in a state of anxiety, because people don't respond well long-term to anxiety. So leaders understand this nuance of being careful with fear. I think about it when my daughters are telling me something positive a boy said about them, because they're at that age, you know? How do I destroy the boys that they're coming to like, but not my daughter's heart? You know, he said what? He said, you're funny and you smile a lot and you're serious when you need to be. Yeah, he got that from a movie because he's a dirty pig. He's not creative. You should never hang out with him again. No, that would be fear-based, and I don't really say that, but maybe I'll figure out a way to destroy the boys and not my daughter's heart. Either way, you get the point here. Be careful with what you do with this idea of fear. Let me tell you a few things about leaders and what they do. A leader will make decisions from a place of self-sacrifice. A leader will make decisions from a place of self-sacrifice. Now, a lot of the foundation I cover with you in the 12 weeks and the Figure That Shift Out is learning how to care for yourself well. You can't care for yourself well until you care for others, or you can't care for others well, excuse me, until you care for yourself well. You know, that whole big idea, love your neighbor as you love yourself. You can't love your neighbor well till you love yourself well. But as a leader, you understand that there are times when you make a sacrifice for the greater good. And you're not ready to lead at the zenith of your potential. You're not ready to capture all what is possible in your trajectory if there are not moments where you're able to count the cost and go, nobody has to know, but I'm going to do this. Now, that flows into the second action. A leader also cares for their own heart to lead from an overflow of life and health. So you got to care for your own heart emotionally and physically so that you can lead from an overflow of life and health. And I know that I'm just like, it's like I'm speaking out of both sides of my mouth. I know that's a tension. Leaders always navigate tensions. That's what leadership is. It's navigating these opposing ideas in the gray. And there's a time for me to skip my run to sacrifice for the greater good. And there's a time to do it even though there's a part of my world on fire. How do you know which one? You just learn as you keep moving forward. But listen, here's the thing. If you're going to wear the mantle of leadership, if you're going to move in the role of a leader, you are your own leader first, and self-leadership is the most difficult leadership. That's why I spend so much time on it in the first 12 weeks with the Figure That Shift Out, because if you can learn how to lead yourself, the rest will flow out of that. So we want to learn to care for ourselves. Third action of the leader. A leader listens to the people around them. It's just that simple. I believe that the messages I need to hear not only come from my own self-leadership, but also through others, whether it's your wife, your husband, your love interest, your trusted advisor. But I look at the people that serve with me on the Site Shift team. Yes, I can say to them, I'm the leader and this is how it's going to be. But they know that I want to hear what they've got to say. That I want to be shook by it. I want to be changed by it. I'll say this in meetings. I'll go, okay, and I don't have to say this in our current structure, but in previous times when I've led meetings, I would say this phrase a lot. Like, here's what I think needs to happen. Convince me otherwise. All right, you convinced me. Let's change. Or I wasn't convinced. We're going to stay with this course of action. I would just voice that out. But a leader listens. Last action of a leader. A leader models the vision they're asking people to live. They see it through. They don't stop short. They run through the tape. And to be a leader worth following is to be the kind of leader that is honest about their process and what they're doing to live it out. Now, let me just give you a few encouraging ideas underneath this. One, you don't have to have all the answers. Yes, you live it out, but it doesn't mean having all the answers. That goes back to the listening idea. It's not pressure on you to be perfect, to have the perfect answers, to always have the right answers, to always live it out perfectly. No. When you don't live it out, tell others. Call yourself out. You know what? I want to be the kind of leader that does this, but I didn't do that here. That's powerful. Living it out perfectly doesn't mean living it out doesn't mean you live it out perfectly and you never make a mistake. It just means when you do, you're using it as a teaching moment. So you don't have to have all the answers. You don't have to live it away perfectly. You can give away power because the goal here is to leave everything better. It's not for you to be at your best. The key question in leadership is, are they at their best? Am I helping them be at their best? And that no matter what happens, you can just keep going. So those are some thoughts for you about leadership. Let's talk about the empath, the role of the empath. Now, most of the people I work with, their strongest channel, the one that they go to the easiest, is leadership. That's just, you know, the reality of the work that I'm in. Probably a third of my business still is maybe half. I'm trying to think about that, somewhere in that range, but pay me out of pocket. So they are very ambitious, but I'm still surprised that even in that space, I still have people occasionally that empath is their strongest channel. And it's just a real beautiful thing for me when I walk through the coaching process with somebody that that is their strongest channel, because anytime I'm with what's the opposite of me, it grows me. So when, there is a future insight shift that is coming where, and I can share a little bit of this because by the time this podcast goes live, this will be more public, that we're going to have certified coaches and trainers. And, you know, it'll be fun for me to hear stories about where people maybe have an empath as their first one, and they meet with people who are leaders in their first ones, and they're going to be shaped and changed by that. But let me just break down very clear that, you know, we don't need fake empathy. I joked about this a couple episodes ago. You know, I'm sorry, I can't come to the phone to answer your call on a voicemail. No, you're not. You know, be honest. change your message. You don't have to really do this, but I would do it just to be fun. I had a million better things to do than answer this call, or we're friends, but I need to know what this is about before I commit to engaging this call. No, it doesn't sound like a good time to help you move. My back and time are worth more than your cheap barren pizza. Sorry, I can't come to the phone. But the idea here is when you are in a place that you're living out of this empath role and you're turning that up, there is a deep awareness that you have that comes from such an authentic, beautiful place. And that's a gift. So please do not buy into the lie in the world of leadership that says leaders are first and foremost strong direction givers. I meet with lots of people, and I can tell you that it is beautiful to watch a leader's first channel be empath. It's beautiful to me, just as much as it is to watch a leader's first channel be that leader role that we just got done talking about. Be who you are. Now, we want to learn to cater our approach to move in another role. So if you struggle giving some strong, clear direction, we want to develop that muscle, develop that skill. That's going to be key. But don't hate who you are, because I love it. I mean, I'm thinking of somebody right now that has a great potential to be a leader. He just finished the 12-week coaching, and empath for sure was his first. And wow, what a beautiful gift that I see him give to others as he leads in an authentic way. So here we go. Let's dive into this. Empath. Here are the actions of the empath. They have an indomitable hope built on abundance. Now, these are maturing empaths. The thing that I've noticed about empaths, if they're very insecure and not maturing, they tend to see the pain of life and suffocate in it. And if that's you, just know that there is growth and hope so that you come to the point that you are not rocked so hard by the bad things of life that it shuts you down. So as empaths develop, a key action for them to look for is, am I connecting my world, my people, the people I'm with, to abundance? We talk a little bit about this idea in different places, but the world is headed somewhere beautiful. At the core, you can see the data of this, poverty and people getting access to water and healthcare, and there's just a ton of metrics there. And in every generation, there's always a group of people that believe it's going to hell in a handbasket. It's the worst it's ever been. That's always the case. I have a quote from Socrates somewhere where he just is like railing about the immature youth of the day. You know, that's always the case. The hate that's on millennials is so stupid. It's just generational changes. It's just different approaches. And the empath that is living out of that channel in an expressive, full way, they can turn it up to 10. They have an indomitable hope because they're connected to abundance. And because of that, the second action, they live and speak authentic. Now, I've already just was joking about the fake empathy, but that's a gift that the empath brings. A leader in the leader role turned up can gloss over reality. An empath is going to call that reality to be, which takes us to the third action. An empath feels the perception of others. Now, we talked about perception already in skill 7, but this is a huge part. You know, the empath allows her emotions to guide her nurturing or his nurturing and sensitivity to the hurt around him or her. They allow emotions to guide them to be nurturing and sensitive. You know, it's not a weakness for a leader to get their feel on. Now, some of your feelings are lies for sure, but it's not enough to say some of your feelings are lies. You want to be to the place as a leader that you develop this empath role, that you know how to be emotionally attuned with yourself and with others. It'll keep you aware and connected to your joy and hurt, and aware and connected to the joy and hurt of others. When you're emotionally secure, you're going to navigate the tension of solving problems and letting situations play out before you inject too much energy. Your emotional confidence, it'll allow you to be a healthy leader and parent and caretaker of others. When others are struggling, you're not going to be threatened by that. Hey, turning up your empath, it's huge for your emotional awareness so that you can unblock a flourishing creativity in your work. There's a quote by Otto Rank that says, "Pessimism comes from repressed creativity." I'm in a place where, you know, I've been creating regularly for years upon years. And I would connect that to a number of things, but one of them being emotionally aware. I'm not dominated by my emotions. I'm not denying them. I'm aware and learning. When you're exploring your emotional life and who you are, it'll help you align with your intuition, with your inner voice. When you speak, your wisdom will emerge. I mean, I've heard too many people speak with a mouth stuffed with shallow cravings just to numb out pain, and they can't speak with a deep wisdom. It's because there's not a place that they've lived out and paid attention to in such a way that they know their story. You'll know your story. So I hope that you're stirred to pay attention to the empath role around you, and I hope that you're stirred to think about how you can develop it. Now, let's talk about that sage role. When I talk about the sage, you know, people say, okay, give me something to visualize that. I've had people ask that, and it's easy for me to fall back to like Dumbledore or Gandalf. And I like using those as examples because it does dispel a myth about the sage. It's not that the sage doesn't care. It's not that they're indifferent. They just know, again, how to backpedal it, soft pedal it, to let others fill the space so that they can figure out where people are and how to help them grow. When I talk about these, you know, these three roles, it's tapping into this idea that we are dynamic human beings and we can move in and out of these roles as we need to. And the sage role, I do work with people that's their dominant role, and it's really cool to see that, especially at a young age. It does tend to come with healthy, evaluated experiences. Or I would say, you know, experiences that you've been through that have shaped you, but you can now make sense of and look back on and gain hindsight. You know, it's the best foresight kind of thing. So what we want to do, though, is we're developing the sage role. I want you to think about what happens in that role. First action is, okay, a sage surfaces the protest. A sage, because they're secure in who they are, it's not just the empath that's bringing comfort to the protest. A sage knows how to surface it. It's in the meeting, knowing something's off and getting somebody to admit it. I remember one time, I've told this story episodes back, so just real quick, I'll refer to it. I had a chairman of the board who was not in on the vision, and I could feel that, but I couldn't get him to admit it. And so I could bring empath role, right, and try to comfort him into the vision. That wasn't working. I'm meeting him for breakfast and still nothing's happening. I could lead and just do it and let him react, but he was resisting. And so it was a couple of meetings in a row of me just creating space. One of those meetings, he took the bait, if you will, and just went off on me and completely destroyed his credibility to continue to lead and actually resigned on the spot. And it was the best thing for us. It unblocked the organization. We had a little bit of change to endure for a time frame, but we're able to reinvent ourselves and go to the next level. So the first action is, because the sage is secure in who they are, they surface that protest. They figure out where alignment isn't happening. They're not afraid of what's going on in the moment. See, what happens for a lot of us is, with especially leadership, we get a vision and we're afraid just to release the moment to be where it is. And that keeps us blocked up. Sages unblock it. They surface the protest. Second action that's so huge for the sage is they do coach, advise, and warn through story form. They coach, advise, and warn through story form. Sages see the moment playing out. They know where it needs to go. And they're going to tell stories, funny and serious, to wake people up. This is how it's worked throughout human history. Human civilizations, thousands of years, cultures that aren't even connected, have had kind of like three big roles in their societies. You've had the kings or the queens, the prophets or the priestesses, and or the prophets or the prophetesses, and the priest or the priestesses. I'm probably butchering these words, but you see these throughout human society. These three roles emerging, and the best leaders know how to be the king or the queen, the leader. They know how to be the empath, the priest, the priestess, or the sage, the prophet, the prophetess. And when you're the sage and you're using the story form, you're secure in who you are. You know it's okay to leave some things unsaid. You don't have to say all you know. You're you're finding a way for them to hear you and then come to where you are. Third action. A sage paints the picture of what could be. So a leader is giving direction. They may be giving a vision, but a sage is giving a big picture view of how things could look if we all bought in, if we all went with this direction, if we all said yes. Now, to get to that point, the sage has to surface it, which is why that's the first action. Now, the biggest, I think, hang-up that people get is how to surface, because once you surface, you're kind of moving along the lines. You can surface where the protest is, then you know the story that needs to be told, and then you can point them to the bigger reality that you're asking them to buy into. So the key issue here is, how do you surface the protest? Well, here's a number of ways that I do it. Hey, man, how's it going? Just what's the, if this is an initial thing, what's the best and worst part of your day? You know, I'll do that with the kids at the table. I've told you about this before. Somebody changed it to happy and crappy. What's your happy crappy? I love it. I have people that I'll meet with just real quick, and we'll connect and we'll say, okay, where are we winning? Where are we losing? Where are we stuck? Where are we inspired? It's a quick way to check in. I'll do that in team settings because I want to hear where people think the organization is winning, losing, stuck, inspired, where the team is winning, losing, stuck, inspired, where they are winning, losing, stuck, inspired, because all of that is gold. It's data that I can figure out where their protest might be. And if I can't get them to surface that, then I'm not going to know what, you know, that vulnerable moment where it needs to pivot and change. The other night, I was talking to my daughter, and she had wanted for her birthday to get some highlights in her hair, and then she wants to get some purple color in her hair. And my wife was like, you've got to talk to her and talk her out of that. So I'm walking by, and she's looking at her hair, and I kind of took a moment to do a really pro parenting move and make a comparison to another kid that had gotten their hair dyed purple. And I was like, doesn't that look trashy? And as soon as that happened, she's like, Dad, and I forget her exact words, but why can't you support what I want to do? And this is a great reminder for you, for me, that everyone in our lives will always gravitate towards the people that support their dreams. Your kids will go to the places that support their dreams, however small or big they are. And she figured out that, you know, I may have been put up to this. And I didn't admit to that part, so just for the health of my marriage. But I could see just, you know, the protest was very clear, the distraughtness. And I'm in the leader mode. I'm trying to fill the space with my power and presence. I'm trying to convince her to not get her hair colored a certain way. And I saw her draw back from me, and I went into the empath role. And I said, you know what? I'm sorry. Let me tell you how I know what you feel like. And I just screwed up. And then I went into the sage role, and I told her a story about when I was in the 9th grade and I wanted to grow my hair out long in the back. Yes, just long in the back. As cool as it sounds, 1992, mullet style all the way. I was probably late to that fad, but either way, it was my dream. And I wanted it to be curly in the back, but it wasn't curly. So I had my friend, I got his mom to just perm it at his house, and it looked as atrocious as you can imagine. So I have this long hair that I grew out. It's poofy, curly, sticking out on both sides of my head, and I thought it looked weird. So I just, standing looking in the mirror, took scissors and cut on each side of my neck so that I could trim it so that it didn't poof out so much. And that looked as bad as you can imagine in the back. And man, my dad didn't want me to grow that hair out long. He sure did not want me to get it permed. And you know what? I needed to do that for my own self, and my own journey, and my own expressiveness, as crazy as it sounds. And so, sage-like, I just told her that story and said that I get it. And a moment that went off the rails got back on the rails and was even a deeper connection. May you be the kind of leader who's secure enough in who they are to move in and out of these roles as needed, to turn up their expressiveness as needed, so that that vision that you have can happen. Peace.